44. One form of justice. But as for the bondsmiths, they had members only three, which number was not uncommon for them. Nor did they seek to increase this by great bounds, for during the times of Madassa only one of their order was in continual accompaniment of Urethiru and its thrones. Their spren was understood to be specific, and to persuade them to grow to the magnitude of the other orders was seen as seditious. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 16, page 14. Kaladin never felt more uncomfortably conspicuous than when visiting Dalinar's light-eyed training grounds, where all of the other soldiers were highborn. Dalinar mandated that his soldiers wear uniforms during duty hours, and these men obeyed. In his own blue uniform, Kaladin shouldn't have felt set off from them, but he did. Theirs were more lavish, with bright buttons up the sides of the fine coats and gemstones set into the buttons. Others ornamented their uniforms with embroidery. Colorful scarves were growing popular. The light-eyed looked over Kaladin and his men as they entered. As much as the regular soldiers treated his men like heroes, as much as even these officers respected Dalinar and his decisions, their postures were hostile toward him and his. "You are not wanted here," those stares said. "Everyone has a place. You're out of yours. Like a chowl in a dining hall."
"May I be relieved from duty for today's training, sir?" Renarin asked Kaladin.
The youth wore a Bridge IV uniform. Kaladin nodded. His departure made the other bridgemen relax. Kaladin pointed toward three watch positions, and three of his men ran off to stand guard. Moash, Teft, and Yake stayed with him. Kaladin marched them up to Zael, who stood at the back of the sand-covered courtyard. Though the other Ardens all busied themselves carrying water, towels, or sparring weapons to dueling light-eyes, Zael had drawn a circle in the sand and was throwing little colored rocks into it.
"I'm taking you up on your offer," Kaladin said, stepping up to him. "I brought three of my men to learn with me."
"Didn't offer to train four of you," Zael said.
"I know."
Zael grunted.
"Do 40 laps around the outside of this building at a jog, then report back. You have until I get tired of my game to return."
Kaladin gestured sharply, and all four of them took off at a run.
"Wait,"
Zael called. Kaladin stopped, boots crunching sand.
"I was just testing how willing you were to obey me," Zael said, throwing a rock into his circle.
He grunted as if pleased with himself. Finally, he turned to look at them.
"I suppose I don't need to toughen you up. But boy, you've got red on your ears like I've never seen."
"Red on my ears?" Kaladin asked.
"Damnation language. I mean that you feel you've got something to prove, that you are spoiling for a fight. It means you're angry at everything and everyone."
"Can you blame us?" Moash asked.
"I suppose I can't. But if I'm going to train you lads, I can't have your red ears getting in the way. You're going to listen and you're going to do what I say."
"Yes, Master Zael," Kaladin said.
"Don't call me master," Zael said.
He thumbed over his shoulder toward Renarin, who was putting on his shard plate with the assistance of some Ardents.
"I'm his master. For you lads, I'm just an interested party who wants to help you keep my friends alive. Wait here until I get back."
He turned to walk toward Renarin. As Yake picked up one of the colored stones Zael had been throwing, the man said, without looking,
"And don't touch my rocks!"
Yake jumped and dropped the stone. Kaladin settled back, leaning against one of the pillars that held up the roof overhang, watching Zael give instructions to Renarin. Syl zipped down and began inspecting the little rocks with a curious expression, trying to figure out what was special about them. A short time later, Zael walked past Renarin, explaining the lad's training for today.
Apparently he wanted Renarin to eat lunch. Kaladin smiled as some ardens hurriedly carried out a table, diningware, and a heavy stool that could support a shardbearer. They even had a tablecloth. Zael left the bemused Renarin, who sat in his hulking shard plate with his faceplate up, regarding a full lunch. He awkwardly picked up a fork.
"You're teaching him to be delicate with his newfound strength," Kaladin said to Zael as the man passed back the other way.
"Shardplate is powerful stuff," Zael said, not looking at Kaladin. "Controlling it is about more than punching through walls and jumping off buildings."
"So when do we—"
"Keep waiting." Zael wandered off.
Kaladin glanced at Teft, who shrugged.
"I like him,"
Yig chuckled.
"That's because he's almost as grouchy as you are, Teft."
"I ain't grouchy," Teft snapped. "I just have a low threshold for stupidity."
They waited until Zael jogged back toward them. The men grew immediately alert, eyes widening. Zael carried a shard blade. They'd been hoping for it. Kaladin had told them they might be able to hold one as part of this training. Their eyes followed that blade as they'd follow a gorgeous woman taking off her glove. Zael stepped up, then slammed the blade into the sandy ground in front of them. He took his hand off the hilt and waved.
"All right, try it out."
They stared at it.
"Collects breath," Teft finally said. "You are serious, aren't you?"
Nearby, Syl had turned from the rocks and stared at the blade.
"The morning after talking to your captain in the middle of the damnation night," Zael said, "I went to Bright Lord Dalinar and the King and asked permission to train you in sword stances. You don't have to carry swords around or anything, but if you're going to fight an assassin with a shard blade, you need to know the stances and how to respond to them."
He looked down, resting his hand on the shard blade.
"Bright Lord Dalinar suggested letting you handle one of the King's shard blades. Smart man."
Zael removed his hand and gestured. Teft reached out to touch the shard blade, but Moash seized the thing first, taking it by the hilt and yanking it, too hard, out of the ground. He stumbled backward, and Teft backed away.
"Be careful now," Teft barked. "You'll cut off your own storming arm if you act like a fool."
"I'm no fool,"
Moash said, holding the sword up, pointing it outward. A single glory spren faded into existence near his head.
"It's heavier than I expected."
"Really?" Yig said. "Everyone says they're light."
"Those are people used to a regular sword," Zael said. "If you've trained all of your life with a long sword, then pick up something that looks like it has two or three times as much steel to it. You expect it to weigh more, not less."
Moash grunted, delicately swiping with the weapon.
"From the way the stories are told, I thought it wouldn't have any weight at all, like it would be light as a breeze."
He hesitantly stuck it into the ground.
"It has more resistance when it cuts than I thought, too."
"Guess it's about expectations again,"
Teft said, scratching at his beard and waving Yig to have the weapon next. The stout man pulled it free more carefully than Moash had.
"Stormfather, but it feels strange to hold this," Yig said.
"It's just a tool," Zael said. "A valuable one, but still just a tool. Remember that."
"It's more than a tool," Yig said, swiping it. "I'm sorry, but it just is. I might believe that about a regular sword, but this is art."
Zael shook his head in annoyance.
"What?"
Kaladin asked as Yig reluctantly handed the shard blade over to Teft.
"Men prohibited from using the sword because they're too lowborn," Zael said. "Even after all these years, it strikes me as silly. There's nothing holy about swords. They're better in some situations, worse in others."
"You're an ardent," Kaladin said. "Aren't you supposed to uphold Boren arts and traditions?"
"Well," Zael said, "if you haven't noticed, I'm not a very good ardent. I just happen to be an excellent swordsman.
He nodded toward the sword.
You going to take a turn?
Syl looked at Kaladin sharply. I'll pass unless you demand it, Kaladin said to Zyle.
Not curious at all how it feels?
Those things have killed too many of my friends. I'd rather not have to touch it, if it's all the same to you.
Suit yourself, Zyle said. Bright Lord Delanar's suggestion was to get you used to these weapons, to take away some of the awe. Half the time a man dies by one of those, it's because he's too busy staring to dodge.
Yeah, Kaladin said softly. I've seen that. Swing it at me. I need practice facing one down.
Sure. Let me get the sword's guard.
No, Kaladin said. No guard, Zyle. I need to be afraid.
Zyle studied Kaladin for a moment, then nodded, walking over to take the sword from Moash, who had begun a second turn swinging it. Syl zipped past, twisting around the heads of the men who couldn't see her.
Thank you,
she said, settling onto Kaladin's shoulder.
Zyle walked back and fell into a stance. Kaladin recognized it as one of the light-eyed dueling stances, but he didn't know which one. Zyle stepped forward and swung. Panic. Kaladin couldn't keep it from rising. In an instant, he saw Dalet die, the shard blade shearing through his head. He saw faces with burned-out eyes reflecting on the blade's too silvery surface. The blade passed a few inches in front of him. Zyle stepped into the swing and brought the blade around again in a flowing maneuver. This time it would hit, so Kaladin had to step back. Storms, those monsters were beautiful. Zyle swung again, and Kaladin had to jump to the side to dodge. A bit overzealous there, Zyle, he thought. He dodged again, then reacted to a shadow he'd seen from the corner of his eye. He spun and came face to face with Adolin Colin. They stared one another in the eyes. Kaladin waited for a wisecrack. Adolin's eyes flicked toward Zyle and the shard blade, then turned back to Kaladin. Finally, the prince gave a shallow nod. He turned about and walked toward Renarin. The implication was simple. The assassin in white had bested both of them. There was nothing to mock in preparing to fight him again. Doesn't mean he's not a spoiled blusterer, Kaladin thought, turning back to Zyle.
The man had waved over a fellow Ardent and was delivering the shard blade to him.
I have to go train Prince Renarin, Zyle said. Can't leave him alone all day for you fools. Ivis here will go through some sparring moves with you and let you each face down a shard blade as Kaladin has done. Get comfortable with the sight, so you don't freeze when one comes for you.
Kaladin and the others nodded. Only after Zyle had trotted away did Kaladin notice that the new Ardent, Ivis, was a woman. Though she was an Ardent, she kept her hand gloved, so there was some acknowledgement of her gender, even if the flowing Ardent clothing and shaved head masked some of the other obvious signs. A woman with a sword. An odd sight. Of course, was it any odder than dark-eyed men holding a shard blade? Ivis gave them lengths of wood that, weight and balance-wise, were decent approximations of a shard blade. Like a child's scribble with chalk could be a decent approximation of a person. Then she put them through several routines, demonstrating the 10 shardblade sword stances. Kaladin had been looking to kill Light Eyes from the moment he'd first touched a spear, and during the later years, before being enslaved, he'd gotten pretty good at it. But those Light Eyes he'd hunted on the battlefield hadn't been terribly skilled. The majority of men who were truly good with a sword had made their way to the Shattered Plains, so the stances were new to him. He started to see and understand. Knowing the stances would let him anticipate a swordsman's next move. He didn't have to be wielding a sword himself, he still thought it an inflexible weapon, to make use of that. An hour or so later, Kaladin set down his practice sword and stepped over to the water barrel. No Ardents or Parshmen ran drinks to him or his men. He was just fine with that. He wasn't some pampered rich boy.
He leaned against the barrel, taking a ladle of water, feeling the good exhaustion deep in his muscles that told him he'd been doing something worthwhile. He scanned the grounds for Adolin and Renarin. He wasn't on duty watching either of them. Adolin would have come with Mart and Eth, and Renarin was under the watch of the three that Kaladin had assigned earlier. Still, he couldn't help looking to see how they were. An accident here could be... A woman was on the practice grounds. Not an ardent, but a true light-eyed woman. The one with the vibrant red hair. She had just wandered in and was scanning the grounds. He didn't bear a grudge about the incident with his boots. It simply typified how, to a light eyes, men like Kaladin were playthings. You toyed with dark eyes, took what you needed from them, and gave no thought to having left them far worse for the interaction. It was how Rishon had been. It was how Sadeus was. It was how this woman was. She wasn't evil, really. She just didn't care. She's probably a good match for the princeling, he thought as Yake and Teft jogged over for some water. Moash stayed with his practice, intent on his sword forms. Not bad, Yake said, following Kaladin's gaze. Not bad at what? Kaladin asked, trying to figure out what the woman was doing. Not bad looking, Captain, Yake said with a laugh. Storms! Sometimes it seems the only thing you think about is who has to be on duty next. Nearby, Syl nodded emphatically. She's light-eyed, Kaladin said. So? Yake said, slapping him on the shoulder. A light-eyed lady can't be attractive? No. It was as simple as that. You are a strange one, sir, Yake said. Eventually, Ivis called for Yake and Teft to stop idling and return to practice. She didn't call for Kaladin. He seemed to intimidate many of the Ardents. Yake jogged back, but Teft lingered for a moment, then nodded toward the girl Shallan. You think we have to worry about her? Foreign woman about whom we know very little, sent in to suddenly be Adolin's betrothed? Sure would make a good assassin. Damnation! Kaladin said. I should have seen that. Good eye, Teft. Teft shrugged modestly, then jogged back to his training. He'd assumed the woman was an opportunist, but could she actually be an assassin? Kaladin picked up his practice sword and wandered toward her, passing Renarin, who was training in some of the same stances that Kaladin's men were practicing. As Kaladin walked toward Shallan, Adolin clanked up beside him in shard plate. What is she doing here? Kaladin asked. Come to watch me while I spar, presumably, Adolin said. I usually have to kick them out. Them? You know, girls who want to gawk at me while I fight. I wouldn't mind, but if we allowed it, they'd clog the entire grounds every time I came. Nobody would be able to get any sparring done. Kaladin raised an eyebrow at him. What? Adolin asked. You don't get women coming to watch while you spar, bridge boy? Little dark-eyed ladies, missing 7 teeth and afraid of bathing? Kaladin looked away from Adolin, drawing his lips to a line. Next time, he thought, I let the assassin have this one. Adolin chuckled for a moment, though his laughter trailed off awkwardly. Anyway, he continued, she probably has a better reason to be here than others, considering our relationship. We'll still have to kick her out. Can't set a bad precedent. You really let this happen? Kaladin asked. A betrothal to a woman you'd never met? Adolin shrugged armored shoulders. Things always go so well at first, and then they fall apart on me. I can never figure out where I go wrong. I thought, maybe if there was something more formal in place... He scowled, as if remembering who he was talking to, and tromped forward at a faster pace to get away from Kaladin. Adolin reached Shallan, who, humming to herself, passed him right by without looking. Adolin raised a hand, mouth opened to speak, as he turned and watched her walk farther across the courtyard. Her eyes were on Nall, head ardent of the practice grounds. Shallan bowed to her in reverence. Adolin scowled, turning to jog after Shallan, passing Kaladin, who smirked at him.
"Come to watch you, I see," Kaladin said. "Completely fascinated by you, obviously."
"Shut up," Adolin growled. Kaladin strolled after Adolin, reaching Shallan and Nahl in the middle of a conversation.
"Visual records of these suits are pathetic, Sister Nahl," Shallan was saying, handing Nahl a bound leather portfolio. "We need new sketches. Though much of my time will be spent clerking for Bright Lord Sabariel, I would like a few projects of my own during my time at the Shattered Plains. With your blessing, I wish to proceed."
"Your talent is admirable," Nahl said, flipping through pages. "Art is your calling?"
"Natural history, Sister Nahl, though sketching is a priority for me in that line of study as well."
"As well it should be."
The Ardent turned another page.
"You have my blessing, dear child. Tell me, which devotary do you call your own?"
"That is a subject of some consternation on my part," Shallan said, taking the portfolio back.
"Oh, Adolin, I didn't notice you there. My, but you do loom when you wear that armor, don't you?"
"You're letting her stay?" Adolin asked Nahl.
"She wishes to update the royal record of shard plate and shard blades in the war camps with new sketches," Nahl said. "This seems wise. The king's current accounting of the shards includes many rough sketches, but few detailed drawings."
"So you're going to need me to pose for you?" Adolin asked, turning to Shallan.
"Actually, the sketches of your plate are quite complete," Shallan said, "thanks to your mother. I'll focus first on the king's plate and blades, which nobody has thought to sketch in any detail."
"Just stay out of the way of the men sparring, child,"
Nahl said as someone called for her. She walked off. "Look," Adolin said, turning to Shallan, "I can see what you're up to."
5'6", Shallan said. "I suspect that's all I will ever be up to, unfortunately."
5 foot, Adolin said, frowning.
"Yes,"
Shallan said, scanning the practice grounds.
"I thought it was a good height, then I came here. You Alethi really are freakishly tall, aren't you? I'd guess everyone here is a good 2 inches taller than the Vaden average."
"No, that's not—" Adolin frowned. "You're here because you want to watch me spar. Admit it. The sketching is a ruse."
Someone has a high opinion of himself.
Comes with being royalty, I suppose. Like funny hats and a fondness for beheadings. Ah, and it's our captain of the guard. Your boots are on the way to your barracks via courier."
Kaladin started as he realized she was talking to him.
"Is that so?"
"I had the soles replaced," Shallan said. "They were terribly uncomfortable."
"I liked how they fit."
"Then you must have stones for feet."
She glanced down, then cocked an eyebrow. "Wait," Adolin said, frowning more deeply.
"You wore the bridge boy's boots? How did that happen?"
"Awkwardly," Shallan replied, "and with 3 pairs of socks."
She patted Adolin's armored arm.
"If you really want me to sketch you, Adolin, I will. No need to act jealous, though I do still want that walk you promised me." "Oh, I need to get that. Excuse me."
She strode toward where Renarin was taking hits on his armor from Zyle, presumably to get him used to taking a beating while wearing plate. Shallan's green gown and red hair were vibrant slashes of color on the grounds. Kaladin inspected her, wondering just how far she could be trusted. "Probably not far."
"Insufferable woman," Adolin growled. He glanced at Kaladin.
"Stop leering at her backside, bridge boy."
"I'm not leering. And what do you care? You just said she was insufferable."
"Yeah," Adolin said, looking back toward her with a wide grin.
"She all but ignored me, didn't she?"
"I suppose."
"Insufferable,"
Adolin said, though he seemed to mean something completely different. His smile widened, and he strode after her, moving with the grace of shard plate that was so discordant with its apparent bulk. Kaladin shook his head. Light eyes and their games. How had he found himself in such a position that he had to spend so much time around them? He walked back to the barrel and got another drink. Soon after, a practice sword crunching to the sand announced Moash joining him. Moash nodded gratefully as Kaladin handed over the ladle. Teft and Yake were having a turn facing down the shard blade.
"She let you go?" Kaladin asked, nodding toward their trainer.
Moash shrugged, gulping water.
"I didn't flinch."
Kaladin nodded appreciatively.
"What we're doing here is good," Moash said. "Important. After the way you trained us in those chasms, I thought I didn't have anything left to learn. Shows how much I knew."
Kaladin nodded, folding his arms.
Adolin displayed several dueling stances for Renarin, Zyle nodding approvingly. Shallan had settled down to sketch them. Was this all an excuse to get her close, so she could wait for the right time to slide a knife into Adolin's gut? A paranoid way to think, perhaps, but that was his job. So he kept an eye on Adolin as the man turned and began sparring with Zyle to give Renarin some perspective on how to use the stances. Adolin was a good swordsman. Kaladin would give him that much. So was Zyle, for that matter.
"It was the king," Moash said. "He had my family executed."
It took Kaladin a moment to realize what Moash was talking about. The person that Moash wanted to kill, the person he had a grudge against. It was the king. Kaladin felt a shock spike through him, as if he'd been punched. He turned on Moash.
"We're Bridge Four,"
Moash continued, staring off to the side at nothing in particular. He took another drink.
"We stick together. You should know about why I am the way I am. My grandparents were the only family I ever knew. Parents died when I was a child. Anna and Da, they raised me. The king, he killed them."
"How did it happen?" Kaladin asked softly, checking to make sure none of the Ardents were close enough to hear.
"I was away," Moash said, "working a caravan that ran out here to this wasteland. Anna and Da, they were second none. Important for Dark Eyes, you know. Ran their own shop, silversmiths. I never picked up on the trade. Liked to be out walking, going somewhere. Well, a light-eyed man owned two or three silversmith shops in Kolinar, one of which was across from my grandparents. He never did like the competition. This was a year or so before the old king died, and Elokar was left in charge of the kingdom while Gavilar was out at the plains. Anyway, Elokar was good friends with the light-eyes who was in competition with my grandparents. So he did his friend a favor. Elokar had Anna and Da dragged in on some charge or another. They were important enough to demand a right to trial, an inquest before magistrates. I think it surprised Elokar that he couldn't completely ignore the law. He pled lack of time and sent Anna and Da to the dungeons to wait until an inquest could be arranged." Moash dipped the ladle back into the barrel. "They died there a few months later, still waiting for Elokar to approve their paperwork."
"That's not exactly the same as killing them."
Moash met Kaladin's eyes.
"You doubt that sending a 75-year-old couple to the palace dungeons is a death sentence?"
I guess you're right."
Moash nodded sharply, tossing the ladle into the barrel.
"Elokar knew they'd die in there. That way the hearing would never go before the magistrates, exposing his corruption. That bastard killed them. Murdered them to keep his secret. I came home from my trip with the caravan to an empty house, and the neighbors told me my family was already 2 months dead."
"So now you're trying to assassinate King Elokar," Kaladin said softly, feeling a chill to be speaking it.
Nobody was close enough to hear, not over the sounds of weapons and shouting common to sparring grounds. Still, the words seemed to hang in front of him as loud as a trumpeter's call. Moash froze, looking him in the eye. "That night on the balcony," Kaladin said, "did you make it look like a sharp blade cut the railing?" Moash took him by the arm in a tight grip, looking about.
"We shouldn't talk about this here." "Stormfather, Moash," Kaladin said, the depth of it sinking in. "We've been hired to protect the man."
"Our job," Moash said, "is to keep Dalinar alive." "I can agree with that. He doesn't seem too bad for a Light Eyes. Storms, this kingdom would be a lot better off if he were king instead. Don't tell me you think differently."
"But killing the king? Not here," Moash hissed through clenched teeth. "I can't just let it go. Nalan's hand. I'm going to have to tell—"
"You'd do that?" Moash demanded. "You'd turn on a member of Bridge Four?" They locked gazes. Kaladin turned away.
"Damnation. No, I won't.
At least not if you'll agree to stop. You may have a grudge with the king, but you can't just try to, you know."
"And what else am I supposed to do?" Moash asked softly.
By now, he'd pulled right up to Kaladin.
"What kind of justice can a man like me get on our king, Kaladin? Tell me."
"This can't be happening." "I'll stop for now," Moash said, "if you'll agree to meet with someone."
"Who?"
Kaladin asked, looking back to him. "This plan wasn't my idea. Some others are involved. All I had to do was throw them a rope. I want you to listen to them."
"Moash, listen to what they have to say," Moash said, grip tightening on Kaladin's arm. "Just listen, Cal. That's all. If you don't agree with what they tell you, I'll back out. Please?
You promise not to do anything else against the king until we've had this meeting?"
"On my grandparents' honor."
Kaladin sighed, but nodded.
"All right."
Moash relaxed visibly. He nodded, scooping up his mock sword, then ran back to do some more practice with the shard blade. Kaladin sighed, turning to grab his sword, and came face to face with Syl, hovering behind him. Her tiny eyes had gone wide, hands as fists to her sides.
"What did you just do?" she demanded. "I only heard the last part."
"Moash was involved," Kaladin whispered. "I need to follow this through, Syl. If someone is trying to kill the king, it's my job to investigate them."
"Oh,"
she frowned.
"I felt something. Something else."
She shook her head.
"Kaladin, this is dangerous. We should go to Dalinar."
"I promised Moash," he said, kneeling and untying his boots and removing his socks. "I can't go to Dalinar until I know more."
Syl followed him as a ribbon of light as he took the fake shard blade and walked out into the sands of the dueling grounds. The sand was cold under his bare feet. He wanted to feel it. He fell into wind stance and practiced a few of the swings that Ivis had taught them. Nearby, a group of light-eyed men nudged one another, nodding toward him. One said something soft, making the others laugh, though several others continued frowning. The image of a dark-eyed man with even a practice shard blade was not something they found amusing.
"This is my right," Kaladin thought, swinging, ignoring them. "I defeated a shard-bearer. I belong here."
Why weren't Dark Eyes encouraged to practice like this? The dark-eyed men in history who had won shard blades were praised in song and story. Evod Markmaker, Lannison, Ranenor of the Fields. These men were revered. But modern Dark Eyes, well, they were told not to think beyond their station. Or else. But what was the purpose of the Boren Church? Of ardents and callings in the arts? Improve yourself. Be better. Why shouldn't men like him be expected to dream big dreams? None of it seemed to fit. Society and religion, they just flat out contradicted each other. Soldiers are glorified in the Tranquiline Halls, but without farmers, soldiers can't eat. So being a farmer is probably all right, too. Better yourself with a calling in life,
But don't get too ambitious, or we'll lock you away. Don't get revenge upon the king for ordering the death of your grandparents, but do get revenge on the Parshendi for ordering the death of someone you never met." Kaladin stopped swinging, sweating but feeling unfulfilled. When he fought or trained, it wasn't supposed to be like this. It was supposed to be Kaladin and the weapon, as one, not all of these problems bouncing around in his head. "Syl," he said, trying a thrust with the sword. "Your honor, Spren, does that mean you can tell me the right thing to do?"
"Definitely," she said, hanging nearby in the form of a young woman, legs swinging off an invisible ledge.
She wasn't zipping around him in a ribbon, as she often did when he sparred. "Is it wrong for Moash to try to kill the king?"
"Of course."
"Why?"
"Because killing is wrong."
"And the Parshendi I killed?"
"We've talked about this. It had to be done."
"And what if one of them was a surge binder?" Kaladin said, "with his own honor spren."
"Parshendi can't become surge ba-"
"Just pretend," Kaladin said, grunting as he tried another thrust. He wasn't getting it right. "I'd guess all the Parshendi want to do at this point is survive. Storms, the ones involved in Gavilar's death, they might not even still be alive. Their leaders were executed back in Alethkar, after all. So tell me, if a common Parshendi who is protecting his people comes up against me, what would his honor spren say? That he's doing the right thing?"
"I..."
Syl hunched down. She hated questions like this.
"It doesn't matter. You said you won't kill the Parshendi anymore."
"And Amaram? Can I kill him?"
"Is that justice?"
Syl asked. "One form?"
"There's a difference."
"What?" Kaladin demanded, thrusting. "Storm it, why couldn't he make the stupid weapon go where it should?"
"Because of what it does to you," Syl said softly. "Thinking about him changes you, twists you. You're supposed to protect, Kaladin, not kill."
"You have to kill to protect," he snapped. "Storms, you're starting to sound as bad as my father." He tried a few more stances, until finally Ivis came over and gave him some corrections. She laughed at his frustration as he held the sword wrong again.
"You expected to pick this up in one day?"
He kind of had. He knew the spear. He'd trained long and hard. He thought that maybe this would all just click. It didn't. He kept on anyway, going through motions, kicking up cold sand, mixing among the Lydai's sparring and practicing their own forms. Eventually, Zael wandered by.
"Keep at it,"
the man said, without even inspecting Kaladin's forms. "I was under the impression you'd be training me personally," Kaladin called after him.
"Too much work,"
Zael called back, digging a canteen of something from a bundle of cloth beside one of the pillars. Another Ardent had piled his colored rocks there, which made Zael scowl. Kaladin jogged up to him.
"I saw Dalinar Kholin, while unarmed and unarmored, catch a shard blade in midair with the flats of his palms."
Zael grunted.
"Old Dalinar pulled off a last clap, eh? Good for him."
"Can you teach me?"
"It's a stupid maneuver," Zael said. "When it works, it's only because most shardbearers learn to swing their weapons without as much force as they would a regular blade. And it doesn't usually work. It usually fails, and you're dead when it does. Better to focus your time practicing things that will actively help you."
Kaladin nodded.
"Not going to push me on it?" Zael asked.
"Your argument is good," Kaladin said. "Solid soldier's logic. Makes sense."
"Huh. Might be hope for you after all."
Zael took a swig from his canteen.
"Now go get back to practicing."